comment about 1984.
I thought I'd just give you my version of 1984, not all of it, but just a little bit of it, because I think 1984 really has been a remarkable year. I like to think of it, we go back to January, and it's sometimes hard to remember all of it, but we were still in recession. And we, however, I think had hope. We kept waiting for that moment when things would genuinely prove to be better. We suffered Oregon through 3 years of recession, and we had survived. I thought back on that when I thought of our survival song I remember once, Invictus, Bloodied but Unbowed. That's the way we actually began the year, with good hope and reason for hope. 1984 was a year of international expansion of our mind. I like to put it that way because I think Oregon kind of thought of itself maybe somewhat of an inferiority complex, but not a partner in world trade. But thanks to you and the media, to both those that traveled with us and those who remained to report it, the visits that we made around the world this year were well reported, and Oregonians began to think in much broader terms than we had before, and that we are part of the international community. Personally, these feet of mine have touched soil in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, Cyprus, Syria and Israel, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, China, Hong Kong. I find that remarkable, just swimming in my head to think that I've done all of that. And I personally have spoken with world leaders, ranging in time from 45 minutes to almost 2 hours, with President Mubarak, President Assad, Prime Minister Shamir, Vice President Lee of Taiwan, President Chun of Korea, the Crown Prince and Princess of Japan, Premier Zhao of China. Even had a little bit of time with our own president and vice president. Although I've said to these other leaders, I've spent more time with them than I have with our own president and vice president. Oregon has had a dramatic turnaround in the anti-business image. That was all punctuated, that turnaround, by the announcements of NEC America, by Fujitsu, and two plants coming to Oregon, Epson, and that incidentally was their first plant in the United States, and National Semiconductor, all within a short period of time. And then you add on to that our existing companies of Intel, that said they will expand in Oregon, and said their plans call for more employment in Oregon than in California, and Wacker Siltronic with $165 million of announced expansion, plus, of course, many other plants, spin-offs, and additions. 1984, almost, but not quite, saw us end our land use acknowledgement process. Now I think we have only 20 or 21 jurisdictions left to acknowledge. That's important. That's important that Oregon is going to come to the conclusion of a process that I don't believe any other state in the nation will be able to accomplish ever. I don't think, as I said before, that any other state has either the political courage or the stamina to go through what Oregon did. But that's going to set Oregon apart from all other states in the Union, and we're almost finished with it. But it's been a tough one. 1984 saw Oregonians again turn down ballot measure 2. I think that was very significant. The danger of a ballot 2 type passing, and we came so close again, and Oregonians have given us that breathing room, and it's up to us to address it, and I believe that opportunity is there. Unemployment is up in Oregon, but unemployment also is holding too high. Our prospects, however, knowing that we're holding right now during the worst part of our employment year, really bodes well for the future of our state. Structurally, Oregon is sound, sounder, I believe, than any other state. That is to move into the future. We haven't moved as passed out of recession that others have. However, our movement has been positive, it's been a straight trend, and it's been solid, and I expect our future is going to be great. I look now as we, and these aren't all the really great events, you'll report whatever you think is important, but these have been just spots of things that have happened. I think Oregon addressed the needs of the homeless, addressed the needs of the hungry. We did that, I think, extremely well, and not just during the Christmas season. It's highlighted at this period of time, but all year long, Oregon has had a good response. And incidentally, that was true even during the depths of our depression. That's one area in which I've been very proud of Oregon and Oregonians. So I look forward to a very positive legislative session. I say that because legislators, I believe, want to polish their image. They know it's badly tarnished. They know it because of the last couple of sessions and some special sessions which have been rancorous and cantankerous. And they want to do something about it. They've got some genuine opportunities to do so. Most dramatic, of course, of which is the matters related to taxation. But I believe that that'll be done. So I guess the good news is the bad news is wrong. Orwell was not right. His prophecy didn't come to pass. I keep thinking about all those people that feared it all the years and kept thinking about the terrible things that would happen in 1984. They didn't. In 1984, I think is a, I don't know if pivotal is the right word, but was a good solid year for Oregon, and one from which we can advance into the future. So, sort of some rambling thoughts I've had on 1984 as a governor of the state. Some things I worried about, all of them. But I think we came through okay. Oregonians are good people. I'm very proud of it. Sort of an opening statement.
Did anything that you hoped would happen not happen during 1984? Was there any on the downside of the statement you just made?
Oh, I only hope for a faster move out of recession, lower unemployment. Actually, I've said and truly mean, it's hard, I think, for some to understand, but as a governor, you worry about a lot of things. Unemployment really, really worried me. It wasn't a matter of statistics that worried me. It was that Oregonians were out of work and they wanted to work. I really felt it personally when we were 12.6%. I kept worrying about those Oregonians who wanted work. I would have liked to have had unemployment lower than it is, kept hoping that would be the case. But as I watched the trend and the slow movement down on unemployment, still too high, I said, well, we're moving in the right direction. And that's what we need most of all.
Sort of on the flip side, Governor, what are your hopes for 1985? Hopes for 1985?
Well, I think it's very important not only that the legislature pass a measure dealing with property taxes, but the people of Oregon pass it. That happens. Let's say that combination takes place. Oregonians said no by a slim margin on two. And then we propose, I'm suggesting, of course, to use the plan I'm giving to the legislature, that passes the legislature, but beyond that, and more important, that it passes the people of Oregon, then I know absolutely for sure that Oregon is well on its way to a strong future. If they don't, that specter of a ballot two remains, and that's a dark cloud I want to get out of there. Number two, I've been talking about and hoping for some resolution of the matter of the Columbia River Gorge. That's a personal thing with me. And this looks like the year for it. I mean, 1985 looks like the year for it. And if those two events take place, I feel real good. There are many other things, obviously, subsidiary to it. Those are two major things I'd like to see happen.
What do you want to happen with the gorge?
Well, all I can do is give you a broad definition, because you know none of it can be solved in many ways. But that a solution is reached on the gorge that effectively will tell us that the beauty of it will remain for for future generations. And the solution, it comes in different ways. I mean, how it's going to be done and all the rest of it. I don't want to make any further definition than that. I've made two statements on the subject. I was speaking to some of the supporters, friends of the Gorge, and I said, you know my minimum and maximum, because I made my first recommendation independent of Governor Spellman, and then we made a joint statement, and the first one was my maximum, and the second was my minimum. So that is how you do it.
But you're not ruling out
possible federal protection for the Gorge.
Well, the question really is not federal participation, because they're going to participate. It's whether or not they'll be the dominant voice. My plan is still to talk with Governor Gardner. We haven't had that opportunity yet, although I offered him that opportunity. We'll still do it, however, I'm sure, before their session begins. And talk with a congressional delegation. Willing to sit down and at the table and work with, incidentally, the Thousand Friends. That doesn't mean they're going to get all what they want, nor I may get all I want.
Governor, you've received a letter from Lane County Christmas Tree Grower, at least one, who outlined the disastrous fumigation process. They're talking, the problem exists 11 months from now. Do you see any relief for them this year or next year? Is anything being considered as a solution?
Well, yes. The Department of Agriculture has been looking very carefully at the whole situation. They're talking about, and they're having some hearings on, use of spray, and whether it's the bacterial spray or the 7 spray. Don't think they made any final decisions in regard to which way it's going to have to go, but something like that does have to take place.
That's an overall. I'm talking about individually with people who have suffered a substantial financial loss due to the state-ordered fumigation process, which they followed with a letter. From what I understand, there may be a lawsuit pending on this. Do you see any solution individually for these people?
Well, if they're going to sue, then I guess I better not say anything, but I'm going to anyway. If there had not been any fumigation, they wouldn't have sold any of the trees because they came to a quarantine, really, is what they were facing. And something had to be done, at least to give them an opportunity to sell what trees they could. So I think that's a little unforgiving if they're going to sue us once they fumigate, because to give them an opportunity to sell, I think that's a little unforgiving. Maybe that's the best I should say right now. If they're going to sue, I better not say any more. I don't really believe they have a legitimate reason to sue, but that's my view. If they want to sue, however, that's their right and prerogative, and they're entitled to do that.
Governor, what are your thoughts about the possibility of a permanent dump site at Hanford?
Pardon, what was it?
What are your thoughts about a permanent dump site at Hanford?
The important thing, because we're a neighbor to Washington, where that site, if it were to go there, that's where it would be. And because of our mutual use of the Columbia River, as well as, of course, constant exchange between Oregonians and Washingtonians across the borders, that it's very important that the state of Oregon be a partner in the decisions that lead up to whatever decision they come to, and that we as Oregonians be absolutely assured of the environmental soundness of whatever they do, and that we are protected. So it isn't just a matter for the state of Washington. Really, we are that close that it's also a matter for Oregon, and Oregon must be, and I would insist that we would be, part of the process leading to whatever decision is made.
Have you made any phone calls in that regard to ensure that?
We're starting the process, haven't as yet. We don't know what they're going to be doing at this point in time. However, that's a message that definitely will be sent to both the Secretary of Energy, Don O'Dell, as well as the administration.
Would there be any benefits to Oregon in having that site at Hanford?
Well, I suppose the only benefit I can think of right now is that the fuel that is being stored at Trojan Plant would be moved up to that. That's the whole idea of it, that there be a storage. I'm fully mindful that that's going to be there for a long, long time. And so any environmental protection has to be one that makes all Oregonians feel assured during that long, many hundreds of years, that we will be protected. But the only advantage I can see is move it off-site from Trojan and up there to Hanford.
Well, would it be better if it was in Texas or Missouri? Or the other?
Well, I suppose any governor could say the same thing. It would be better if it didn't exist at all, and if it did, it'd be better if it was somewhere else. But, you know, it's here, and right now it's in the United States, and it's stored on location everywhere else. This is something, incidentally, the federal government... I announced the 25th anniversary of preemption a couple of years ago because the federal government preempted the states in that regard. And, other, you know, 25 years, you think they can make a decision of some kind, and they didn't. Sure, it would be better if it was somewhere else. And it may very well be that Hanford isn't the place. You know, they've narrowed it down. It may very well be, but the point is I want to make sure that Oregonians are protected. I want to make sure that that soil is stable and that it can be contained. I want to make sure that whatever process is used is environmentally sound. I want to make certain there's no leakage into the underground water or into the Columbia River.
You know. Do that by working through the congressional delegation or directly with the EPA?
All of them. Everyone. Anyone. I wouldn't leave anyone untouched in that process.
Are you going to fight the legislative proposals to... install a legislature that meets once a year?
I'm not sure who proposed that, but my position is very clear on annual sessions of the Oregon legislature. I am adamantly opposed, and if it comes in bill form, I can deal with it. If it comes as a resolution to the people of the state of Oregon, I'll be out campaigning real hard against it. So I'm unalterably opposed to it. I don't want to get into a whole lecture on that one, but... I happen to believe, having been a member of the legislature, it's some deficiency in the process rather than a deficient, you know, things are more complicated, or, you know, all the things they say they can't do, I say they can do. And the tools are available to get them done. And if there are problems in the budget, for example, we have the opportunity for such special sessions, and we already proved we can deal with it. So I'll give the whole speech if it gets out to a vote of the people. But I am unequivocal and unmovable and my strong belief that there's no need in Oregon for annual sessions of the Oregon legislature. I guess that's clear enough, isn't it?
Other than that, what do you like about it?
Well, I've thought about that a great deal and made a lot of speeches on that subject.
How close are you to making your nominations for the Cub?
Well, that depends really on the members of the legislature, the majority leader and the speaker and the president, majority leader of the House and the Senate. They sent me one name, and I sent a letter back to them and said, that does not constitute a list. Please give me more than one name. And so I'm waiting for that answer.
Who was that?
All four of them.
What name was it?
Oh, I can't remember. I didn't even look. No, each one, these are four different people. Each had a name, but they each put in one. And I went out and described the Webster Dictionary definition of a list, and list includes more than one. And so I'm asking, the point, basically what I'm asking is that I get a choice, I get a chance to make the choice. If they only give me one, then they're making the appointment, and that's not what it says in the... and the issue. So I'm really waiting on them. As soon as that develops, then I'll make the appointments.
Is there a deadline or anything?
I don't think there is. I think, again, if the people pass it, like I said before, even though I oppose it, just like I did the lottery, my job is now no longer to oppose it, it's to make it work. So I'm approaching it that way. But I'm really sorry that they decided to, somehow or other, they must have talked to each other because they all sent in one name. I have a feeling they may have talked to each other. But anyway, I sent back a letter to all four of them and said, one is not a list. So I'm waiting on their answer. There'll be little moments like that when I say I'm looking for a good session. We'll have little moments like that, but that's in the overall picture, there's going to be a good session. Nonetheless.
You got any more discussions on the sales tax, legislative leaders?
No, I haven't been able to get a hold of them. I will have with the chairman of the revenue committees, as well as the speaker and the president. And I think those appointments have been set up. When I say that to you, I want to do it, and I think we've got dates where they're going to be around and we can have a chance to talk with them. We concluded last week with some meetings. You know, I've been talking to special interest groups, and that will continue, incidentally. That's an ongoing process.
You met last week with John Danielson, I believe, on the OEA's petition, which is kind of interesting in that if it should pass, even if the legislature passes a sales tax, then it's the operative one. Did you discuss that?
Yeah. No, not that. I saw that in their petition. It doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't make any difference. Presuming that legislature were to pass something and the people of Oregon were to pass it, and then OEA would come along later with theirs, and the people of Oregon would pass it. It's very clear in our Constitution, the last one that passes is the one that becomes the law. And so they didn't have to put that in there. It happens anyway. The last act that passes is the one that prevails. That's why, incidentally, when on the bills that I sign, I not only sign them, but we date them and time them. There's a time on them. The whole idea is which one passed before the other. Because the last one passes could change whatever else you did. So they didn't really need to put it in. I don't know why they did, but they didn't need to. However, I would say to you that if Oregonians, if the legislature passed my plan and Oregonians passed it, I doubt very much if OEA would have any power, enough signatures to change that exercise. I don't think they'd do it.
Governor, do you think Pat Gillis, the new legislator, should resign?
I'm not going to express myself at all on that subject. That is up to the Oregon legislature. That is their responsibility. They are the ones that determine who is seated in the body. And that don't think it's appropriate for the governor to comment on that. That's strictly their responsibility.
Governor, you said the legislature needs to work to improve its image. How should they do that? How can they do that?
Well, you know, I think with greater cooperation between the houses, and I think that'll happen because of the leadership that's selected, moving more efficiently, more quickly through the process, less finger pointing, you know, a whole variety of things. I would say to you, don't do what they did last session. Maybe that's my answer to you. Or don't do what they did in the special session of 1983. You know, just be reasonable and responsive and move quickly. A great example, of course, is the one-day session, special session unitary tax. They addressed the issue, they did it directly, they worked on it, they did it efficiently, and they got home in one day. And I think that added to their luster.
I want to go back to Columbia River Gorge again.
You mentioned, I guess I'd like to try to pin you down. If indeed a federal proposal comes in, and that's what the governor of Washington wants, and that's what the delegation pushes for, could you live with a pact?
Well, you give me some ifs, and I'm not going to respond to Don in the sense that we are at a stage now, and I told you I had my minimum and maximum. And if you go look at my two statements that I made, first unilaterally, and second with the governor of Washington, that is my minimum and maximum, if you look at them. Now, the first one did have the Forest Service involved in the decisions. That is, when there was a dispute between Oregon and Washington, the arbiter was the Forest Service, and they would make the decision. That's the first version of what I said. The second one was in which it would be the bodies, just Oregon and Washington, to make their decisions. And so you've got minimum and maximum. But what I am saying to you that we are at a stage now in which I don't want to make that careful a definition of exactly what I would do. And you gave me a what if. There's a lot of what ifs that are also involved there. I have had conversation with Nancy Russell and members of the Thousand Friends. Very good conversation. We have been in contact with Congressman Wyden. We'll be making a special issue of that when I go back, if not before, and probably will be before, but if not before late February at the National Governors Association. I'll meet with our congressional delegation. And I'm saying right now that within the maximum minimums, I'm willing to listen and compromise. But I don't want to make a definitive statement right now. I don't think now is the time to make that kind of...
I guess I'm not asking for a definitive statement. I'm asking if indeed you have an open mind as far as federal legislation, the PAC would bill. I mean, would you be... You're not opposing that out of hand right now.
What now? What I'm supporting is the measure that the Governor Spellman and I put forth right now. But that doesn't mean I think either what I propose will pass, nor do I believe what Senator Packwood has entirely will pass, but something possibly in between those two. However, let's make this very clear. It was I that proposed and brought to the attention of the public the Columbia River Gorge. It was Vic Atiyah, nobody else. I did that several years ago. It was I that made my first proposal to Congress in regard to what I think ought to happen in the gorge. It was Governor Atiyah that did that. I have made gratuitously many speeches on the Columbia River Gorge. As a matter of fact, I brought up the gorge today. You don't have to. And so what I'm saying to you, that my intensity and desire of protecting the gorge for the future generations of Oregonian is as great, and I believe greater, than almost anybody else that's involved in this matter. Some are trying to preempt it, and I don't care about who gets credit for it. I'm only saying to you that they're trying to preempt it as if they're the only ones that really care about the gorge. That's not true, and I would reject that out of hand, because I'm the one that brought it to the forefront, I'm the one that keeps it in the forefront, and I'm the one that mentioned it today.
Governor, on another subject, there's been some grumbling about the rumors of salaries going to the lottery commission and the director. Do you think relatively high salaries are necessary to attract the kind of people that you think will be needed on that commission?
Well, if you're thinking about $80,000, I think that's too high. I mean, if that's the only figure I've seen, I'm not sure where that figure came from. I think if we look at directors of other states and make some comparisons, that there has to be relatively high salaries. I guess high salary would be anything more than I'm getting, so let me say high salary. That would mean more than what I'm getting. But I think they need to be in the general area of other states, and they bounce all over the place. Nonetheless, we want a good administrator to run a good, clean agency, one that retains its credibility. I think you're going to need a reasonable salary for that. But not in the range that's been at least publicly published that I've seen. I don't know where that figure came from, but I think that's much too high. I don't think you need anything like that.
70 too high, 60 too high. Anything?
Well, it's not me to, you know, it's not up, actually the way the whole thing works, it's not up to me or a governor the first time around. After that, I'm not sure why whoever drafted this thing did it this way, but it says the first time the directors pick the salary, and after that they consult with the governor. I don't know why, but that's what they did. So when you ask, I don't know, something in maybe the 60 range, low 60s, you know, something like that. I think that's, but again, I'm not the one that's going to pick it. It's going to be the directors that I've selected and chosen. But you have to understand that you compare that to salaries and what kind of an operation. This is going to be a multi-million-dollar operation. I don't know how much is expected to get in. I can't do my mathematics, but $40 million, I don't know, $100, $120 million a year or something they're going to take in, something like that. We expect to get $40 million. I can't do the mathematics so much as where the state's supposed to get out of this. But it's a multi-million dollar business. They're going to have an awful lot of employees, and there's an awful lot of danger of credibility. You have to be run honestly and run well. So you have to be very meticulous on how it operates. I think it would be a reasonable investment, the salary range I'm talking about. We done you out? Well, I wish you all have a lot of fun next session. Happy New Year's, in other words. Thank you very much. I'm not bothered, I'm bothered about the size of the dollar of the case, but it's a very important case. And so how much is it worth? You know, what is a reasonable cost to defend it?